October 8th, 1991. "Squirrel?" asked Carney Lenehan. "We're always chasing after that bird brain." "What is he?" Larry asked. "A doper?" Lenehan's partner, Christine Wozniki, answered. "He's the ring around the bowl." She gave Larry Squirrel's proper name, Romeo Gandalf, and he wrote it down. They were in the squad room at Area 6 a little after 8 a.m. The watch commander had just finished briefing the new shift, and the two officers were ready to go out on patrol. "A thief is what he is," said Lenehan. "And a fence. Steal it, sell it, preferably both. Worse than a gypsy. We run his screwy little ass in here once a month, at least. Ed Norris had him on the ring yesterday." "For?" "SOS.
Same old shit."
"Any property?" Larry asked. "When Norris grabbed him?" Lenehan flicked a look at Wozniki, who shrugged. "What he gets, he unloads fast," she answered. Larry said he'd like to see Norris's report. When he asked if Squirrel had any connection to Gus, Carney laughed deeply. "Mongoose and Cobra, those two," he said. "Gus figured Squirrel had a hard-on for his cash register. I guess he tried to get his hand in there once. Gus caught Squirrel so much as sitting at the counter for a coffee he'd run him out." At Paradise, anybody who paid his tab was equal. Ganglord sat next to Pals and $20 hookers. When there was trouble, local kids getting noisy, vagrants who took up residence, or morons like Squirrel, Gus preferred to deal with it himself, even if a copper was in one of his booths. "One time I saw Gus go at him with a butcher knife," Lenehan said. "Don't think those two were writing love letters." Larry felt a sensation travel through him. He was the doer. Squirrel.
"You figure him for the guy who capped Gus?" Christine asked.
"I'm starting to."
"I don't think the little fuck had it in him," Wozniki said.
Lenehan and Wozniki left for patrol. In the front, Larry asked the records clerk to pull documents. Rami's criminal history arrived by fax from downtown in half an hour, but the clerk said Norris's report from last night must still have been in filing. While the clerk was looking, Larry called Harold Greer. Harold was in a meeting, which was just as well. Larry talked to Aparicio, Harold's right hand, who was too amiable to ask many questions. There was one other call Larry needed to make.
"You want a warrant?"
Muriel asked. She was in her office waiting on her jury.
"Not yet. Just stay close."
"Always," she told him.
"Always," he thought.
What the hell did that mean? After another hour, he asked dispatch to round up Lenehan and Wozniki. They were only a few blocks away, and he met them behind the station. It was past noon now, and the lot was as crowded as a shopping center. "What's up?" asked Wozniki through the driver's window of the cruiser.
"Still looking for that report?"
"As a matter of fact,
I called Norris a while ago."
"Okay, but right now I could use some help scooping up Squirrel. Where do I find him?"
"Usually the street," said Lenehan. "It's not cold enough yet for him to take the hike to the airport. Whenever he's run one of his little jobs, we find him at the same pizza parlor on Duhaney. Hop in, we'll take a ride."
Today, Squirrel had skipped the pizza. After a couple of hours, they ended up at the joint where Colin said he'd encountered Gandalf. It was called Lamplight, and it was strange it had any name at all. It was a shithole. You knew you were in trouble when a place kept cyclone fencing across the window while it was open. Outside, on the sidewalk near the door, there were smacked-out hookers trying to score a john or a fix, guys with disability checks or habits of their own, the paper bag crowd. When the three officers strolled up, they all scattered. Carney and Christine went in the front, and Larry ambled around to the alley in case Squirrel opted for the stage door. He heard Lenehan whistle for him a minute later.
"Detective Starcheck, make the acquaintance of Romeo Gandalf."
The man Carney was pushing along was a scrawny, crazed-looking little thing with eyes flashing around like Mars lights. Rami whined, asking several times what he had done.
"Shit," Larry said. "Where's the locket, Romeo?"
Romeo, as expected, said he didn't know nothing about that.
"Ah, shit," said Larry again.
"Gandalf wouldn't have held a cameo for months only to sell it now." Larry described the piece, but Squirrel kept saying he hadn't seen nothing like it. Larry thought of Erno's warnings about Collins. This wasn't the first time a jailhouse snitch had run changes on Larry. He was ready to let Squirrel stroll, but Lenehan unexpectedly grabbed Gandalf by the scattered hairdo and pushed him into the back of the cruiser. At six, Lenehan pointed Rami to a bench. He knew the way himself, then took Larry's biceps. He could tell there was a problem from the way Carney kept looking up and down the hall. "You ain't going to find any reports or nothing from last night. Because you ain't going to find that cameo in property." Larry groaned. He was just too old for this shit. "Carney, I know it's not on you, but this meatball's going to tell me you had that locket last night when they pinched him. You know that. So what am I supposed to tell Harold?"
"I understand," said Carney. "I'm doing what I can. We've been looking for Norris all day now. He's off. Girlfriend swears he's on the way in."
They were interrupted by a communications clerk. Larry had a call. His first thought was Muriel, but it was Greer instead. Larry tried to strike a cheerful note.
I think we're about to clear this case, Commander."
He gave Harold some of the details. "Who's with you, Larry?" He knew Harold meant task force detectives, but Larry played dumb and mentioned Lenehan at Wozniacki. "The Lone Ranger rides again," said Greer to himself. He told Larry he would get a homicide detective there on the double. When Larry lowered the phone, there was a big black guy waiting. He was smiling as if he had something to sell, which he did, in a way. This was Norris.
"Here, you need this," he said.
He took the cameo out of his coat pocket. He hadn't even bothered to put it in a plastic sleeve. Larry had made it for a long time on this force by saying live and let live, but this was too much. He grabbed the locket roughly from Norris's hand.
"You're just Dick fucking Tracy, aren't you?" Larry said to Norris. "You pinch a guy who's got jewelry in his pocket that was on TV every day for a week because it belonged to a murder vic, and the guy you snatch happens to have a known thing with another of the victims? And what are you thinking about? How much you can get when you sell the fucking evidence?"
"I hope there aren't any more at home like you."
"Ease up. This ain't your man. It's just some little local whackhead booster. He wouldn't cop on the wigs, so I was teaching him a lesson. What's the harm?" "Harm? I got a great chain of evidence, don't I? Booking sheet, evidence log. How do we prove to Bernie the attorney this is what you took off his client?"
"Don't bust my chops, man.
Everybody here knows how to testify."
Larry turned away, but Norris called after him.
"You know, if he's wrong on the murders," he said, "I'd get a piece of the bust."
Larry didn't bother to answer. You couldn't talk to a guy like that.